For the sermon today, I'm going to be talking about the lessons that I wrote about in my book, Held, Showing Up for Each Other's Mental Health. It's published by Skinner House Books, which is a UU internal publishing company in 2020. So next slide. I'll start with a story. This actually happened in my own congregation. There was a family who had a daughter who had a severe mental health difficulty and was being hospitalized in a psychiatric ward in a nearby hospital. And she and her husband, every evening, would, after they came home from work, they would go and visit their daughter in the psychiatric ward. And then one day, they got a call from somebody in the congregation saying, someone else in the congregation had was hospitalized in emergency, and we were trying to put together casseroles and dinners for this family because they were visiting their loved one in their hospital every night. Could you possibly bring a casserole too? And they wanted to help out, so they said, okay, and they put together a casserole, took it over to the family, and then rushed off to visit their daughter in the psychiatric ward. And on the way home, the woman said to herself, wait a minute, we have a member in the hospital too. Nobody's bringing us casseroles. Is there a double standard here? The answer to that question is yes, there is a double standard. Unfortunately, mental illness and probably substance abuse are sometimes called the no casserole diseases because nobody comes in and helps out your family when you're having trouble. So if you get no other message from me other than this is, this no casserole disease needs to stop. People are hospitalized for emotional problems. Their family is struggling too, and they need to have casseroles. And they need to be visited in the hospital if they would want to have visitors, because sometimes people won't visit somebody in the psychiatric ward. So that's the lesson. If you remember that, you're okay. Okay, I'm going to start giving some just information about mental health, the next chart. One in every five Americans and adults each year receives a mental health diagnosis. Nearly half of these also have addiction problems. And it's been worse since the pandemic. In fact, I heard the latest statistic I saw was 1 in 4. So that's changed since I first wrote the book. So every Sunday when you come to church, you think 1 in 4 people. So the pews and the Zoom screens are filled with people living with mental health problems and their loved ones who are trying to help them cope with it. There are many people that suffer silently, and they come to church in the hopes of getting some hope to get through the rest of the week. The next chart. Basic definitions. What is mental health? These are from the American Psychiatric Association. Mental health is a successful performance of mental function resulting in productive activities, fulfilling relationships with other people, and the ability to adapt to change and cope with adversity. So productive activities, relationships, and being able to cope with adversity. What is mental disorder? A mental disorder is a behavioral syndrome creating impairment or distress in thinking, mood, or behavior that has been diagnosed by a mental health professional. So distress in thinking, mood, or behavior, it doesn't mean somebody's just odd, it just means something that's causing distress. And I also want to make the point that mental health, there is a continuum. It isn't like everybody is either mentally well, has good mental health, or they have a mental health disorder. There's a continuum that we live our lives on. Sometimes we're in one side or the other. So it's not a, you know, specific thing that's true for everybody. So next chart. Recovery from mental health. So what does it mean to be recovered? It's a process of change in which people improve their mental health and wellness. They live a self-directed life, and they strive to live to their full potential. And I want you to notice that it's not necessarily the absence of symptoms or the absence of need for medications. People can have symptoms and medications, but they can be in recovery from mental health. I know this very personally. So the next chart. When my daughter was born in 1978, yes, that was 47 years ago, I had a severe postpartum depression, and I was suicidal. I was hospitalized because of that and spent some time in psychiatric ward, an experience which I found very disturbing, and felt like I was a damaged human being after that. For many years, I was one of the lucky ones where the medication helped me, and I was able to go back to my job. My first career before I was a minister, I was a software engineer, and I worked for IBM Corporation. So I went back to my job as a computer software engineer. I was even a manager for a while. IBM was a great company to work for. But inside, I was miserable and felt a lot of shame for what had happened to me. After a number of years, I finally decided I not want to live my life like this anymore. I don't want to be so incredibly miserable inside. So I went back to my psychiatrist, the same guy who helped me in the hospital, and I told him that I was willing to make any change in my life. I just needed to understand what it was I needed to do so I wouldn't be so incredibly unhappy all the time. And so I started meeting with him regularly. And at one point he asked me, "What are you doing for yourself spiritually?" And I said, "Nothing, because I grew up as in a Christian household and went to church every Sunday, and I was in youth group, but after college I just stopped going." And he said, "Would you like for me to teach you how to meditate?" And when he asked me that question, I thought, "What? You gotta be kidding me. Sitting around doing nothing, how is that gonna help anything?" Because I was one of these people who wanted to do something, do more things to get better. And what he was suggesting is maybe that really wasn't serving me. But I had promised myself that I would do whatever he suggested because I trusted him. And so he gave me a little book on meditation, and I went home and I read the book. And I would sit for every day for maybe 5 minutes or 10 minutes, even 15 minutes sometimes. And it was literally the only time when I wasn't rushing from one thing to the next, the only time that was a pause in my life. And then the next time I went back to see my psychiatrist, I said, I don't know where it came from, but I'm happy. And I'll never forget what he said. He pointed at me and he said, it came from you. It still gets to me. I realized he was right, and it was like my whole concept of how I was living my life was flawed in some way, and he was right, that happiness isn't something that somebody gives us. Happiness is something that comes from within. And I did not know that until I had experienced that. And I became quite happy, and even more happy. In fact, I became sort of manic happy. And I said, I don't have to take medication anymore. I'm cured. And within 3 weeks, I was back in the hospital. But this time, it was completely different. I thought of my, and I was psychotic, actually. And I thought that I was dying, or I had died, and that this was a place where I was going to be reborn in this psychiatric ward. And that, in fact, is what happened. They put me back on medication, which I needed, obviously. And I came back into not being psychotic. But I was a changed person. Things that used to bother me didn't bother me anymore. I didn't think I was a damaged human being. I just thought I was a person who'd had an experience that they needed to get over. I realized what I had gone through was a spiritual experience, so I started going to church, and I did some research on what various different religions, and I realized that it sounded like universalism to me, and I didn't know what universalism meant, but that word sounded like it matched what my new way of thinking was. So I started going to a UU church. This was in Hayward. And I went there for a fair amount of time, and then I helped to start the church that's in Fremont, Mission Peak UU. I was one of the founding members. That was in the early 90s. There was, at one point, I gave a sermon as a lay person, and talked about my experience with depression. And afterward, there were so many people that came up to me afterwards and said, me too, me too, me too. And we weren't that big of a congregation at that point even, you know. So I started a depression support group that we met, I think, once every couple of weeks, just in my living room. And after I did that for a couple of years, I thought, well, maybe if I took a class on pastoral counseling, it might help me do this work that I'm doing as in a depression support group. So I contacted Stark King School for the Ministry and asked if I could take a class from them as a layperson on pastoral counseling, and they let me attend one of their classes. And when about halfway through the class, I had this realization is this is what I need to be doing with my life, you know, this kind of work. And so at the end of the class, I submitted my application to become a seminarian. And I was able to retire from IBM with a retirement pay, which was very nice to have. And went to seminary for 4 years. And the whole time I was there, my goal was to have a ministry that focused on mental health issues, even though I didn't know anybody else who was doing that. But I thought that's what my calling was. That's what I was meant to do on this earth, at least for this point in my life. So I eventually changed my career and after 25 years at IBM and started a new career. And I'm now in my 21st year as a community minister, UU community minister, and I'm affiliated with the Fremont congregation. So I want to tell you some of the things that I have learned, some of the lessons that I've learned. So in the next chart, that I'm going to get some water here. Healing from a mental health problem isn't just taking some pills and going on with the rest of your life the way you've been doing before. It's looking at the whole person. What's happening with you, not only emotionally, but what's happening with you spiritually. Certainly a big piece of what happened to me. What are you doing with your life intellectually? Are you learning anything new? What are you doing with yourself physically? Taking care of your body, exercising, eating good food? What are you doing with yourself environmentally? So where do you live? Are you able to get out in nature at some point? What about your financial situation? Do you have enough to be able to support yourself the way that you need to be? What about occupational? What are you doing with your life? Are you doing something with your life that you're proud of? And that doesn't mean that it has to be paid work. What are you doing? It could be volunteer work. That's something that you're doing with your life that you feel proud of. How about your social life? Do you have friends? Do you have people over for dinner? Do you interact with people? All of that whole circle that is listed there is what's involved in becoming mentally healthy, becoming mentally well. And that particular model comes from Substance Abuse and Mental Health Association. It's a federal government thing. So what I'm suggesting is people in congregations can help in some of those areas that aren't covered by professional mental health services. Some of those things, being friends, helping out spiritually, helping with learning new things, helping people go out on walks outside, that kind of thing. Those are really important. The next chart. What are the spiritual implications of mental health crisis? It's a spiritual problem as well as a psychiatric problem. A person may experience existential doubts about their self, what's true, what's meaning, what is love, what about agency in their life? What are they able to do? And it might undermine a faith in the divine and a belief in justice. And in fact, it may also be engagement in spirituality may be something that helps in recovery. Then the next chart. Some of the things that I call elements of mental health ministry is developing a spiritual practice. It's helpful to many people with mental health problems and their family members. In fact, there was a study that was done in which spiritual practice was the number one coping skill that somebody said, what do you do that helps you? And many people said, I pray, I meditate, I play music, I have spiritual direction, I engage in Tai Chi or Qigong or yoga, I do chanting, and there's a whole bunch of other things, of course, that can be counted as spiritual practice. But the number one thing, and you would think that psychiatry, starting with Freud, de-emphasized any kind of spiritual thing, and you would think that it would be amazing that all these years later, that's the number one thing that helps. Okay, next chart. One-on-one support. Hope. Hope is the first step in recovery. And we may need to see hope for somebody before they can see it. So a story from the first time that I was hospitalized in psychiatric ward, I just thought my life was in ruins and I couldn't do anything. I couldn't care for this perfect child and had a wonderful family and a good career and all that stuff, and I couldn't cope with it. And I just thought my life was in ruins and I had no hope. The psychiatrist said, I can help you. I've helped other people. And I thought, yeah, he just tells that to everybody. And my family said, you know, we know that you're going to come back to us. And I thought, I'm just a burden to them. And then I was in the hospital, and I was, you know, sort of sitting there absolutely miserable. Another patient came over to me, and she said, I've been hospitalized here for 3 weeks, and I came in, when I came here, I was completely miserable and wanted to die. But I followed what my psychiatrist told me, and I now feel so much better, and I'm going to be going home tomorrow. And I want you to know that there's hope for you too. And I believed her. It was like I couldn't hear those same words from a psychiatrist or from my family, but I could from somebody who had been there, who was a bit peer. I'm such a big believer in peer support. And that's why I work at a peer support center in Fremont, because that's what I believe is really important. So that moment when she told me that, and I believed her, that was the moment when my recovery started, that moment. So giving hope to people is a good idea. Next chart. Presence. Presence is a sacred gift. What presence is active listening without judgment, validating the person's feelings, even if you don't agree with what they're saying, and not giving them any advice. Presence is a sacred gift. So I'll give you a story from when I started my internship. I was in a fairly large congregation, and I had been there a couple of weeks, and there was a woman who I had met, and I knew that she had some serious anxiety problems. And before the service, there's a lot of hustling and bustling, getting ready for the service. And she came up to me in the hallway and said, just frantic, I'm so anxious, please help me, Barbara, I can't, I'm so anxious. And I thought, oh my gosh, what am I going to say? And my first inkling was, well, why don't you and I go out and sit in the library. I knew there was nobody in the library at that time. And so to get out of all of the commotion, and I was thinking, what can I tell her to do? What is it that I can tell her to do? I can't think of anything. I'm going to fail as a mental health minister if I can't think of anything to tell people. And so we went into the library, closed the door, and I sat down, and I held her hand, and I was thinking, what can I tell her? What can I tell her? I can't think of anything. And there was no words being spoken. And she finally turned to me after a couple minutes, and she said, I feel so much better just being here with you. What a lesson for me. It wasn't any great thing I was going to tell her to do that was helpful. It was being in the presence of a caring person without me having to tell her anything or tell her that I thought she was wrong and she was going to get better or anything like that. It was just there, being there with her. And that's a lesson that I've learned a number of times. but it is a lesson that I want to suggest to you, because you, as a caring person, can be present to someone else. It doesn't take a lot of skill. It just takes a caring heart. Okay, next chart. I have discovered in my ministry that I was trying to find stigma busting, things that take away the stigma of mental health, because I think I lived with that when I was so incredibly miserable. I had self-stigma. And one of the things that I have done after I finish speaking is I ask people, as an act of public witness, to rise in body or spirit if they or a loved one of theirs has lived with a mental health problem. Nearly every time I've done this, it's been around 80 to 100% of the people will rise. And they all turn around, look at each other, and can't believe that's all those people are living with it, these are people they've known for years, and they had no idea that they had some problem in themselves or their family. So, in coffee hour, people can talk about it, and that's so important, is to be able to tell your story. Okay. Next chart. What helps a person, an individual? These are some categories of things. Professional or peer help. Some people do not have a good experience with professional mental health. Many times a peer center can be helpful for them. Taking care of your body, eating, sleeping, exercising, learning how to manage your stress, being aware of your emotions so that if you realize it's a pattern to what's causing anxiety or depression, if there's a pattern to that, recognizing it so maybe you can catch it before it gets really bad. Enriching your life in some way, doing something creative, or engaging in creative activities, and engaging with your spirituality. All of those things I have found personally helpful, and other people that I've worked with have too. In the book, there's more detail under each of those that tells examples. Next chart. What if it's your family or your loved ones that are living with mental health problem? Again, professional or peer help. National Alliance on Mental Illness, NAMI, has a program called Family to Family that educates family members of what they can do. It's a peer support organization, peer family members. You can learn how to communicate effectively with your loved one and avoid saying things that trigger what's happening with them. You can help them live with their situation. Go on walks with them. Help them make sure that they get their meds if they need some. And basically have a life of your own and don't let this take over your life. So let's see. I'm going to skip over the next three charts and go to the end. That's a picture of my book. There's a study guide. There are some congregations who have set up reading the book, set up a book reading group. And I've heard that it's been very helpful in some congregations. So whoever your book read committee is, you'll put this on their list maybe for someday. So now, as act of public witness to how mental health affects this congregation, and ask you to rise in body or spirit if you or a loved one has lived with a mental health problem. And if you're online, you can write in the chat, yes, if you have, and no, if you haven't. Thank you. You know the truth, and the truth will set you free.